Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire. I'm Scott Jones, your host. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. Today is a very special day for Athlete on Fire. It's probably the most important show that I'll ever release, ever. I know it is, for a fact. I'll tell you why here in a minute, if you didn't catch it from the title. Anyway, if I sound like a frog, it's because I've had a little sinus infection. But you know what? Jerry West, who's one of my dad's favorite athletes, has a quote that I've used probably 500 times. And the quote is, if you only go to work and if you only work hard on the days you feel good, you'd never get anything done. Now, for an audio show, maybe that doesn't apply, but I don't really care. So we're going to go with it. So it is my birthday today, August 25th, and rather tomorrow. I'm recording this on the 24th. It is my birthday tomorrow, but by the time you listen to this, it might be the 25th. My dad passed away on October 7th last year, and that's a tough day to forget. I've been looking for this interview. So when I started Athlete on Fire, I wanted to interview somebody who epitomized the concept of Athlete on Fire, that you can be an athlete your whole life, mentally, maybe not physically, but have that inclination to be an athlete and to fight for what you think is right and to work hard towards a goal. And my dad is really what the whole show was based on, is Athlete on Fire. So back in 2013, like the day before 2014, me and him sat up in his master bedroom at the condo him and my mom were staying at in Stapleton, Colorado, which is just a suburb outside of Denver, and we recorded the first ever Athlete on Fire show. Now, when you guys listen to this, this is not how my dad typically communicate. It was a little more quiet and somber, and I think because I actually had a paper with questions that I wanted to ask, and I was kind of nervous to get the show off the ground. So it was a little more formal than me and my dad ever communicated. But at the same time, the ideas and stories that he'd tell are stories and ideas that he'd been telling me my whole life. And the fact that I captured them on audio was just so meaningful. Anyway, I have been looking for this audio for like 10 months. Literally the day after he died, I wanted to find this because I knew I had it. I knew I didn't release it because me and him didn't think it was that good. So we were like, just don't release it. But I knew that I wanted it, and I knew I'd never throw it away, but I had on this external hard drive, and I finally found the darn thing, and I just listened to it for 30 minutes and cried a lot and smiled a lot, and he told the stories that were the stories in my house that were told over and over and over, and it's, you know, I feel like it was a gift. My birthday's tomorrow. I've been looking for this thing forever. I've gone through this external a million times, at least a million times. And you'll see, like, we're kind of a family with a little faith. So maybe he sent me this down from above. I don't know. That's a good thought. I like the thought. So we'll go with that. Hopefully you learned something about where Athlete on Fire came from, the concept. And if anything, it's going to be part of my dad's legacy for me to be able to listen to this anytime I need some advice when he can't actually give me those answers. So enjoy. Really quick, don't enjoy just now. I actually wanted to say one more thing. If your parents or people that are really close to you are still around and you have a chance, it's 2017. If you have a phone, that audio is good enough. If you have a chance to just sit down and talk with them, get their ideas on the world and in their life, maybe have some preset questions, I promise you, the thing I missed more than anything was my dad's voice. I just remember after he died, I still do it today, but just trying to call him because it was such a habit. I was on the phone with him more than I was in person with him because I lived far away. If you can get the audio with a real conversation with that person, you will not regret it. Actually, you're going to really crave it when they're gone. You're going to crave their voice more than anything because pictures are all over the place. So now you can go enjoy. Here we go. This is what editing's for. All right, welcome to Athlete on Fire, our very first episode ever. I'm here with one of the most inspiring people in my life who has actually motivated me to do things like this, my dad. Typically, we're going to talk to real-life professional and amateur athletes to get their stories of inspiration and where we'll learn what inspires them generally. And today we're going to start with my dad, Scott Jones, same name, and kind of just learn a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit where you grew up and your journey as far as athletes are concerned and yourself.
Well, I was born in Wyoming, but I grew up based in West Virginia. My dad was in the Air Force, and we moved around a little bit. And when I was 5 years old, he went to West Virginia University. And We were in Morgantown for 3 or 4 years, and looking back, obviously it was my dad who got me involved in some sports and playing catch and things like that when I was younger in the elementary schools. And then we moved to Charleston, West Virginia when I was in the third grade, and that's when I got involved with organized sports. The first thing I ever did was play baseball. I think that's what, back in the day, that's what everybody did. And end up playing with 8-year-old kids and playing. And back in the day, though, you didn't have T-ball and all that stuff. You got pitched to and played regular baseball. And from there, I just, in junior high school, I tried to be a football and basketball player. And I remember shooting 300 or 400 times a day, because I didn't even start playing basketball until I was 12 years old. It was always baseball and sandlot football and things like that. And went to high school and lettered in all four sports. Was probably an average or sometime maybe a little bit better athlete, but I didn't have the motivation from coaches that I think that the coaches nowadays are a lot better at. I didn't have anybody pushing me. I didn't have anybody. Most of the coaches back in the 60s and 70s were just, they weren't too smart about X's and O's, which the only reason I'm saying that is because I coached for 38 years. And I'm not sure any of them really cared about the kids. And I think that's one of the reasons why I got into coaching to begin with, was to show the kids that they're important. They might not be great athletes, but they're still a part of something.
Oh, that's cool. And I think one of the resounding themes we're going to find, and this is obviously the first interview for Athlete on Fire, is that there was a mentor or a coach along the way that really catapulted a lot of the kids and athletes to where they are now. And of course, everybody has those coaches to thank eventually, hopefully on the show. So that'd be kind of cool. So what I'm going to do for the first few minutes is just get to know you. Obviously, I know you, but I have some setup questions that are kind of fun, so we'll go through those. So, all right, so you're 15 years old, back in West Virginia, and it's a Saturday morning, and just kind of paint the picture. Like, what are you doing? What time do you get up? What are you doing all day, and who are you doing it with?
Well, I'm usually up at 5 o'clock passing papers. I did that from the time I was 11 until I was 17, senior in high school. But if it was summertime, I was still doing that. And then usually in the mid-morning or sometime, we would, about 9 or 10 o'clock, we'd get some 3 or 4 guys out, and we'd either go play baseball and do a double or nothing thing, or we'd go definitely play basketball as often as we could. In the fall, there was me and about 5 or 6 other guys would play sandlot on the weekends, even after football games. Seems like we were always doing something outside, and we would try to find a gym indoors if it was wintertime. But in the summertime, we were out doing something, playing some type of sport or staying active in whatever we were liking.
Oh, that's cool. Well, and I think we'll probably see a recurring theme that most athletes were doing something similar to what their success was down the road when they were younger, and just kind of see where the work ethic and habits started being created when they were younger. The second one is, and you've had a career of coaching and a lifetime of athletics, what is the most inspiring thing that you've ever seen in person that has to do with sport or athletics in your life?
I'm going to think on this a second, because it's been 38 years. And I've seen a lot of different things. I've seen a lot of kids that care about other kids. I think, to be specific, it'd be kind of hard after all that. But I think there was a kid I coached at Mariner High School in the late 80s who worked his butt off. And he looked at this other guy who was kind of a freak, and he could get away with not working out and be good and not working out and be great. And the other kid asked me one time, he goes, "Hey, how come I gotta work my butt off and this dude over here doesn't have to, and he's getting all these offers and things like that?" I said, "Well, Tony, sometimes God just makes you wanna work a little harder, get you to work harder to reach your goals." So I think that there were times in my coaching career where kids would amaze me with their talent, but also amaze me with their their emotion and their mentality of toughness. Even the last year I coached, we had a middle linebacker that's 5'7", 160 pounds, and he was amazing. He never got hurt. He was always there. It was yes, sir, and no, sir. And I think especially going from the early, mid-70s when I started coaching to, last year, 2013, the society has changed, culture's changed, but the kids who are good and the athletes who are good for the same reasons, I think, that they always were, because of their dedication and what they want to accomplish in their careers and life.
That's cool. And the Tony story is something that's been a big part of my life, and if you don't mind, if you can just tell a little bit more about Tony. Is Tony McKenna, and we're close to his family. And the story that I think you'll tell is probably more inspiring than what a radio show could explain. But if you want to go take a minute or two and just explain what happened.
Yeah, Tony McKenna was a senior at high school, coached at in Florida. The summer before his senior year, he went to an FCA leadership camp. That's Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I believe it was in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And he came back, and he was fired up for the Lord. Reggie White had mentored him and prayed with him about being saved and becoming a Christian. And we were back in, of course, in 89, practice started about August 2nd or 3rd. And we had two-a-day stuff, and we got up to the week before the game, first game, and it was Labor Day, and it was September 4th. And he and Matt Smith, that was his buddy, came over to watch my kids, Shannon and Scott, while we went off to golf a little bit. And they were crazy, and Tony was being Tony, and Matt was being Matt as far as their love for kids and playing around and things like that. And then that night, we had an FCA meeting, and Tony came to the meeting, and he had never done, even though he was an officer, he basically led by example and didn't talk a lot, but for some reason, that Labor Day Monday, we had probably 40 or 50 kids at the church, and we were in the middle of talking about something, and Tony just started talking about being a Christian, about how it's changed his life, about how he had somebody that he could talk to now, no matter what. And then the next day at practice, he had a tough practice, and he wasn't the best he's been. He was, he was an all state linebacker, and Florida State was going to offer him, and he was upset because he didn't practice as hard as he thought he should have. And there was one time where Matt Smith, his buddy, was going to run the ball. Matt was 6'3 and 285 that year, and Tony is 6'2 and about 2 1/4, and it was just a regular linebacker running back drill. And I did it once, and Matt ran over him. He got mad and got all fired up and stood up, and we did it again, and Tony beat him, and he wanted to do it again, and he was just very intense. I was lucky enough to coach him when he was a freshman, and he took on everybody. We were 8-0 that year, and that's hard to do in Florida. But at the end of practice on Monday, September 5th, 1989, we were through with everything, and we were all walking in, and No, it started sprinkling a little bit. I noticed Tony over there on the popsicle, the single dummy. And he was hitting it, and I yelled over to him, said, let's go in, because it's getting cloudy and looks like it's going to be a bad storm. And it's been a while, but the next thing I remember is being knocked down because of lightning. There's three other kids with me as I was walking in. And I noticed that Tony was down on the ground, and he was not moving, and so I yelled at him and said, Tony, quit messing around, and he wasn't moving, and so we started jogging over towards him, and when we got there, you could tell he was probably gone, because we took his helmet off, and his eyes were in the back of his head, but me and Coach Phillips started CPR on him, and it seemed like it took forever, because there was lightning all around us, and it was pouring by now, and I thought it was like a half hour, 45 minutes before the helicopter came, but it was like 7 minutes, somebody told me later. And this is one of the toughest things I've ever seen. But the people that inspired me after that were the McKennas. Dick, his dad, and Gene, his mom, and he has sisters Suzanne and Leslie and Carol, and brothers Rick and Bobby. and they were amazing. They didn't blame the coaches. They didn't blame anybody. They were strong Christian people, especially Gene, and knew that he was where he wanted to be. And it was just an amazing feeling afterwards. The funeral was the most attended I've ever seen. There was probably 500 to 600 people there. It was about 3.5 miles to the graveyard, and it took everybody about 9.5 to get there because there were so many cars. And the thing I take away from that is that you can be whoever you want to be, whatever your dreams are, but if you don't have some type of work ethic, because Tony worked his butt off, and he wanted to be the best there was. And when he was gone, the other kids stepped up to where we probably should have had a losing season, and we were 7-3. And we lost two of those games by 1 point. And the kids took it hard, but they came back, and they did what they're supposed to, and they were inspired. And to this day, if people know the story, then I think it still inspires them to do their best no matter what. And, you know, you can't control the future, but you can control getting there and then go from there.
Yeah, and I was 11 years old at the time, and it was a very formative time for me just to have to deal with death with someone that was so loved in the community, and just to see the outpouring from someone who was only 17 or 18 years old was pretty amazing. And to this day, I think about what it would take to leave a legacy like that, and I'm already twice as old as he was, and I know that I wouldn't have the same outpouring as he did. So legacy is something that I'd like to talk about in the future on these episodes, and we'll talk about that. And it's inspiring, and it's still, even just sitting here listening to it, it still kind of puts a lump in my throat just thinking about it, because it's such a emotional time, but there's so much inspiration, so much good from it, that it was probably worth it in the end. So that one time in my life, and there's another one we'll talk about here in a little bit, were formative for me, but we'll talk some more about my dad. And I always want to do an inspirational quote. It doesn't have to be anything specific. It can come from a movie or a coach, or it can be goofy as all get out. I don't care. It's just got to be something that you like and maybe apply it. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I was thinking of two or three of them, but I like a couple of them. Actually, I like failure's not an option. And what kills me today is that people change that around to success is the only option. And I'm so old school now. I mean, I understand why they do it, but give me a break. You know, the old giving a trophy for everything, no matter what you did or who you did or how you played or what your skill level is, I think that's kind of silly. But the other one is, if you're not where you want to be, you're nowhere. And these guys that come, these quote-unquote some athletes that complain about the school they're at or this and that, the other place, for the most part, it was there, especially in high school, it was their parents' idea to go to that certain school anyway. And I think if you're not where you want to be, you're not going to be very successful.
Okay, why did you start coaching?
All right, this is a weird thing. It was 1974, and I was working on my degree in physical education, and I knew the dean. And Dean Douglas knew of a program, a ninth grade basketball program that needed help. And the guy was coaching. It was a private school, St. Francis up in Morgantown. And he said, would you like to go over there and coach? I said, well, I don't know if I have time, but I'll go over and check it out. So I went over there, and me and Bob Rubenstein, one of my buddies, went over there. And at the time, they were 0-6. And they had some really good, talented kids, and they were good kids. But the coach, you know, in junior high, and right now it'd be ninth grade, freshman class, you don't need a whole lot of X's, though. You just need the kids motivated and let them, you know, play. Let them have some fun. And so we went over there, and we won 9 games in a row, and they went to the little playoffs they had in the county. So it was kind of cool. And from there, it was just, you know, I coached a couple more years in Morgantown while I was getting my degree, and then different places.
Just kind of added up?
Yep.
So is there a mentor or a coach that you'd like to give credit to right now?
that you can think
you
of?
You know what's weird? And I've thought about this. There was my first day of ever playing baseball that I mentioned before. The guy who was running the league in Charleston, West Virginia, his name was Frank Martin. And Frank, I found out later, was a great basketball player at Morris Harvey. And he was also a coach at Lincoln Junior High School, which I ended up going my 7th and 8th grade year. And he would play in the faculty games, and he wore boxing gloves. And he played with boxing gloves and scored 33 points. And that was before a 3-point line and all this stuff. But he was an amazing basketball player. And the whole time I knew him, I didn't know until towards the end is that he had ALS. He had Lou Gehrig's disease. And my 9th grade year, Lincoln Junior High School went 33-0 in the basketball season. And it was 6-minute quarters, and they averaged about 74, 75 points a game. Just ran the crap out of it. But he was very, for somebody to have ALS in advanced stages even, and ended up passing away when I was a junior in high school. And, but here's what the weird part about all that is that I remember specific coaches in junior high and high school. And I remember talking to the college coaches and things like that. And Coach Signetti, I think, was very inspirational too, because at the time he was a first year coach at West Virginia, and he was very fair to the kids, very open-minded, wanted to do what's right for them. And he ended up only being in West Virginia for 3 or 4 years, but then he ended up being he's in the College Football Hall of Fame from what he did at Indiana, PA. But he ended up getting cancer, and it was a rare form of cancer. And I remember the first day I was in the hospital, he came by to see me, and that was about 4 years after I had talked to him last. So I think Coach Signetti and, you know, the things that he stood for were kind of cool, and they sort of stayed with me too.
Okay, so we've got a good background on you. And one of the first questions I like to ask the athletes is, think of a time where you knew you were 100% prepared for something. And it doesn't have to be sport, necessarily. And you went into whatever it was, and you absolutely 100% failed. Yeah. And what was that? And
That was easy. I was, 2000. Yeah, it was 2000. I went for a head football coaching interview at the school in Virginia, and I nailed it, and I said everything I think I was supposed to say, plus a little more. I had the resumes. I had everything done. And there's no way I didn't get the job. There's just no way. This was my second year at this high school. All the kids respected me and played hard for me. I coached girls basketball first and then track. They didn't even have, they had 6 kids on the track team the year before I got there, and we ended up with 37 the second year I was there as far as boys. And I didn't get the job. And when I found out about it, I went into the AD's office and I said, look, I know I didn't get the job. I just want to know what I can work on to do a better interview, or to, you know, what I can do so I can get a head football coaching job, because I'd coached for 29 years or 28 years up till then. And he said, well, he didn't say anything specific, because he knew he hired a guy that was somebody's cousin in that particular area, and that's okay too. But then when I said, well, did you talk to Richard Schaefer? And that was a guy I put down on my list. He was a principal. He wanted me to work for him in Florida, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah. And I said, no, sir, you didn't, because I just talked to him. He never heard from anybody from this area. Wouldn't even know Lexington, Virginia, if you know, threw him in the middle of town. I said, I don't. I was just a tad upset about the fact that he lied to me. So I learned something from there. I was ready for it. I had everything ready. I had a playbook ready. I had all this stuff ready. And then, you know, they hired somebody. And I get that. That's the old good old boys network. And for what I understand, I probably got hired in Florida because of that. So I get that. But it was kind of tough.
Yeah. So probably the thing is, you do what you can control, and at some point, the things that you can't control, everything else is for a reason, and you just got to bounce back and do your best with the next thing.
Right, I agree.
So I know, I probably know the answer to this because you are my dad. But one of the things I'm going to ask athletes in general is when you're at that point, especially for elites, where they could absolutely quit at that time because it's just too challenging, it's too taxing on their mind and their body, or their coaches or their family, or everybody's pushing them too hard and they just want to crawl into a hole. Like for endurance athletes, it might be on the 21st mile for a marathon, or it might be in the fourth quarter or during 2 days for football players. At those moments, I think most people, subconsciously or not, or consciously, they fall back on something that gives them strength. And for me, what that thing was is probably the story you're going to tell me right now, and what of your life experiences gives you an advantage over other peers and people mentally and physically. And if I'm right, I'd like to hear that story.
Well, I think the mentality I had when I was growing up playing sports or playing cards, I always got pissed if I didn't win. And I never understood how come I got so fired up about it and upset about it, and you know, supposedly lost some friends because of that, but I'm not sure they were my friends to begin with. But in May of 81, I was told I had 3 months to live because I had cancer everywhere. It was testicular cancer, and it metastasized to my liver, lungs, and all kinds of places on my body. And, I'm trying to make a long story short here, but the chemo was the hardest thing I've ever gone through. It tore my body up. It tore me up emotionally, obviously, mentally, intellectually, physically. I went from 275 to 210 in about 6 weeks. The side effects were brutal. I still have a side effect from that, in that my left kidney is no longer functioning, and I'm trying to get on a kidney transplant list here in Denver. But as I go through and as I think about what happened, the things I cared about most at the time, which was Kathy, my wife, and Scott and Shannon, my kids, God took care of them while I was going through this thing. You know, the grandparents would come bring them, take them home, and down to where they were going. We were about 3.5 hours away, and I knew they'd had to go because when I was through my second regimen, I was getting irritable and upset, and I didn't want to take them. And I know they're only 3 and 1.5, and they wouldn't remember crap, but I wanted to make sure that they were in a safe spot anyway. And so then I went through the chemo in the summer and had an evaluation, and the tumor that was on my in my abdomen had shrunk, and the ones in my – I had 10 spots on my right lung, and it was down to 1, and the liver stuff was gone. So consequently, in September, I had a 8.5-hour surgery on my abdomen where I had that tumor wrapped around my aorta. So some weird things I think happened during that time, and my temperature shot up to 107, 108, and they thought I was dead. And I think, to tell you the truth, I think it's when God sort of burned out everything, and they put saline in my body cavity and brought my temperature down. And that was on a Tuesday. I was in ICU Tuesday to Thursday, and then I went home Saturday. So all the stuff I've been through, and I've had over 30 procedures, for whatever reason, God's let me heal up quick. And I had one more surgery after that for my lung, and it was just a little retrosection that got the last part of that cancer out. So for the last 32 years or so, May 1st, it's been sort of like a birthday an awakening day to know that I had a second shot and third shot and fourth shot and fifth shot at life. And I remember praying when I was only 26 and a half when I was going through this that I'd see my kids grow up. Well, obviously, I got to see that. And I have 4 grandkids now. And the thing that I remember my dad saying to me, we were at his house and I was having a hard time because my system was breaking down and I was getting cold and fevers and things like that. And he sat on my bed. Now, he didn't say anything the whole summer because that's who my dad is. And he sat beside me, and I said, and because he doesn't say much, I had to ask him the question. And I said, "Do you think I'm going to make it?" He said, "Yeah." And that's all he said. And I said, well, why? He goes, because you hate to lose. And I think that's part of the mentality that all these elite athletes have, because they hate to lose. They hate to think that anybody, anything can beat them. And I didn't want cancer to beat me at the time.
Yeah, and I fall back on that. I think he probably missed a couple points. He was told they only had 3 months to live, which is just crazy. And even if you know about chemo and how it can just destroy you, it was different 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And besides that, even if you know about that, his incision, if you would just humor me for a second and take your index finger, put it 3 inches below your belly button, run it up to your belly button, around your belly button, all the way up to your sternum and around your back. That's one incision that my dad had. And on at least one occasion in high school, one of our halftime speeches consisted of him pulling his shirt up and talking about digging deep and how he had to dig deep during those times in his life. And it was more inspiring. And there's going to be a lot of buddies on here that I play ball with, and they can tell you that they've heard the story, and it's inspiring, and it's just been something that I've always kept in the back of my mind. It's probably the most inspirational story I know personally, and I'm fortunate enough that it's my dad, so it's pretty cool. All right, so we've gone over a lot of stuff. You know, it's not geared towards athletes per se. It's more, I would honestly put this whole website together and this whole endeavor just to have this one interview on record for the whole world to hear, because I think it's important. And I do have a couple other questions that are kind of fun. So do you have any weird habits that lead to success? Like, you know, baseball
players
are superstitious.
Yeah, I had a habit of not having any habits. I remember growing up and seeing Sparky Anderson never touching the white line, and these guys wearing the same underwear, and these guys wearing the same shirt. And I can't remember, even when I was playing ball, anything in particular I did. I know that you used to make sure you put dirt on your hands before you got into the bat and things like that. But I don't ever remember having – I do remember one quirk, though. When I warmed up in basketball, if I didn't hit anything in warm-ups, I was hot as heck in the game and vice versa. Now, I think that was psychological, obviously. But I don't remember anything that I did superstitious-wise or – anything like that.
No. That's cool. Inspiring books or movies?
There's a bunch of those.
Let's go with one.
Yeah, I know. And I got this one, The Failure's Not an Option, obviously, from Apollo 13. I mean, I can't imagine being where they were, doing what they did, and coming back alive. And then I just... You know, there's some sports stories and things like that, but I get some of my best inspiration from normal movies, more normal everyday movies, and normal non-athletic movies. I think Hoosiers is one of the most motivating type of movies I've seen, but I like movies that have to do with human frailty, the fact that somebody's got to fight for their life, no matter if it was cancer or some disease or whatever the deal was.
All right, I got like two more questions. Why do you want to wake up tomorrow morning?
Because I don't want to not wake up. I want to wake up so I can lose another 10 pounds and get on this kidney transplant list. And my brother's in town, and he motivates me too. And he's here to work a little bit and maybe donate his kidney to me. So that's why I want to get up.
That's cool. And this can be answered in so many different ways, but is legacy important to you at all?
I didn't think it was until I retired. In Florida and in Lee County, I was coach of the year, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 times in baseball and in football. I think the legacy I want to have, and as a human being, I think, you know, like David Cutcliffe, the Duke coach, he got National Coach of the Year because he was amazing, 10-2. But I guarantee you he would love to have won the game last night against Florida State and take that Coach of the Year thing and cram it somewhere else. But I think the legacy I want is the kids that I coached knew that I was there for them and not for any kind of personal or professional accolades. And I talked to one of my ex-players from 93, who's now the principal at the old high school I was at, and he said, "Hey, Coach, you don't know what you did for all of us." And I told him, "Well, I really didn't know, but I hope I did." And that's about it.
Yep, and that sounds like the heart of any good coach and parent or mentor out there. And I think that's the legacy, to not get all mushy with it, the legacy that you went off to create by being a coach, making a difference in individual athletes and in students' lives, is the same thing that I want to carry off, just in a different way. I want to reach as many people as possible. And sometimes it comes off as more ambitious than it really is, but that's what the underlying goal is.
Cool.
So I appreciate you being my first interview on January 1st.
Thank you, sir.
2014, sitting here in December of 2013.
Yeah.
And I'll go work out all of my clicks and my voice. Another one. That's pretty good. That's perfect time. 31 and a half.
Really?
So the goal is to get between.
There you go, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was interesting to you. Of course, my family out there, I know you guys would enjoy that. You got some shout-outs. And, man, miss that guy like crazy. Love you, Dad.